Thanks, Dan, for that unexpected introduction. I'll have to have a word with Mary. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm glad there's a number of you who are not at the Santa Claus parade today. It's a real pleasure to be here and to be involved in such a unique speaker series on compassionate justice. And I can only hope that there would be more of these across our country. I must admit, though, I have some fear and trepidation about being here. Over the past couple of decades, there's been a regular study done by Dr. Julian Roberts. And he studies Canadians' confidence in their criminal justice system. And not surprisingly, Canadians have consistently expressed over the last 30 years the most confidence in the police and the least confidence in the parole board. In fact, more than 60% of Canadians have little to no confidence in the work of the parole board. So I and the Parole Board of Canada have a lot of work to do. When I first started working in this system over 30 years ago, I quickly realized that this was a challenging area, an important area, but not one well understood by Canadians. In fact, it is frequently grossly misunderstood. So this is a wonderful opportunity to provide you with some information about the work of the board and hopefully to begin a dialogue about how we continually improve our collective safety. I've named this presentation Beyond the Headlines, as the work of the board is routinely in the news. There are often eye-catching, sometimes sensationalist headlines, and they present, in my view, an unbalanced view of parole. They perpetuate the myths about parole, and over time, I think slowly and subconsciously, they impact the public's perception of and confidence in not only the parole system, but the criminal justice system generally. Now, I want to acknowledge that there's also some very accurate news reporting that goes on, but not enough of it. And I think one of the failures of the Parole Board of Canada, and I think it actually applies to the entire criminal justice system, is a difficulty to sufficiently explain to the public what we do, why we do it, and who we do it for. It's one of our biggest challenges, and it's not an easy one, particularly in today's climate of sound bites, tweets, polarizing ideologies of whether you're seen as to be tough on crime or soft on crime. And apparently there's no middle. When we really should be talking about and demanding to be smart on crime. Think about the things that you've heard recently. Hug a thug, are you hug a thug? If you're not for this legislation, you're for the criminals. So this afternoon, I want to go beyond those headlines, the articles, and the common misconceptions about parole, and share some insight into the work that we are doing, and how we actually work to ensure that there are fewer victims in our communities, and how parole and other kinds of conditional release, in fact, enhance our public safety. So here's how I want to proceed over the next 30 minutes. I'm going to provide a couple of examples of headlines, some of those headlines that drive me crazy, and then I'll come back to them throughout the presentation. Then I want to provide a little bit of information about the work that the board does, including how we make our decisions and the results we achieve. Then I just want to share with you a few things about what I'd like to achieve over the next 4 years of my mandate. And finally, I'm hoping at the end we can have a dialogue on how we can build support for parole and other more effective approaches to criminal behavior. So here are some real-life examples of some headlines that I see as problematic. Killers who have been set free. That's one of them. The parole board is freeing an offender on day parole. Or the parole board approves statutory release for a violent offender, and I've left the name out. I'm going to come back to these headlines over the course of my presentation, but think about the impact of hearing or reading words like freed or approved. The use of these words in the headlines and in the articles that follow are loaded with preconceived notions and misconceptions that can have a lasting impact on a person's attitude towards parole. These type of headlines and the stories that follow can invoke the notion that the board conducts its parole hearings with a bureaucratic disregard for real-world public safety, or has a leniency for offenders, or that we lack empathy for victims and affected communities, or that our decisions do not respect the original sentence, and none of which are true, and which I'm going to address today. So first, a little bit about the board. The Parole Board of Canada is an independent administrative tribunal. It operates at arm's length from the government, which should ensure the integrity of the parole decision-making process. In plain language, that means no one has the power to phone any board member up and direct us to release or not to release an offender. Our mandate, simply put, is to contribute to public safety by facilitating the timely reintegration of offenders into the community. We do this in an open and accountable manner, and we respect the rights of all members of society, including offenders and victims. We also make decisions on record suspensions and pardons, and we make recommendations to the Minister on applications for the Royal Prerogative of Mercy. We also make parole decisions for provincial offenders, those who serve less than 2 years and who reside in a province that doesn't have a parole board. Only Quebec and Ontario have their own parole boards for provincial offenders. So my presentation today is going to focus solely on the work of the board in relation to federal offenders, those serving more than 2 years, and that's the majority of our work. While our mandate is relatively focused, our work is complex and demanding. Board members deal on a daily basis with two fundamental aspects of life: the liberty of individuals and the right of society as a whole to feel safe from crime. Every day we deal with the assessment and management of risk. The public safety is the board's number one priority. In fact, the law demands that the protection of society be the paramount consideration in the determination of all cases that come before us. Our approach to corrections and conditional release in this country is guided largely by research, and there is a large body of evidence that tells us what works. We know that not everyone needs to go to prison for punishment, which is why we have probation, restorative justice programs, and other diversion programs. Why they are not used to the extent that they should be is a whole other presentation. We know that it is more effective to prevent criminal behavior than to correct criminal behavior, and that's another entirely different presentation. But when we as a society do use prison as a punishment, we know, because there is a vast amount of research that tells us so, that society, we, are all better served through returning individuals to their communities through safe, gradual, and supervised releases. No one should walk out of the prison gate without some kind of support and supervision measures in place. In fact, it would actually make us less safe if everyone left prison cold turkey. Offenders are sent to prison as punishment, not for punishment. Most offenders will return to our communities one day, so we should be pretty interested in what happens to them when they are incarcerated. I always use, when I'm talking to people who don't know a lot about our business, think about putting a dog in a cage and then leaving it there, or worse, poke and prod it a bit. What do you think's going to happen when you open that cage? That dog's probably going to come out and bite you. So how do we want our offenders to return to our communities? We know that the right programs, delivered at the right time, by the right people, and in the right environment, can and do make a difference. Our safety is enhanced through a gradual, managed, and supervised release of offenders into our communities, particularly when there are a range of active and properly supported community-based organizations to assist them. The law in Canada provides for a few types of releases in the community, and to keep things simple, because this could get extremely complicated, I'm going to talk about the two main types of conditional release that the Parole Board of Canada makes decisions on. Day parole. Day parole is a release where you have someone on a pretty short leash. They either have to return to the prison or penitentiary every night, or they have to return to a halfway house every night, or some other deemed place that, or some other place that we have deemed acceptable for them to stay. They're under various conditions. So that's day parole. Then there's full parole release. And that's, we just let that leash out a little bit better. In fact, they're usually not staying at a halfway house, but staying at their own house or with their family. Offenders are eligible for full parole, after serving one-third of their sentence. They're eligible for day parole 6 months prior to their full parole release. So you can see that, you know, we'll try you out on day parole under heavy supervision. You're on a pretty short leash. If you do well, we'll consider you at 6 months later for full parole, where you can go back and live with your family, and you're still going to be under supervision and various conditions, et cetera, et cetera. But that's basically how it works. Now, if an offender wants to be considered for day parole, they have to apply for it. For full parole, the board reviews all offenders. That's the law. Now, there is a third type of release where the board has no decision-making authority. It's called statutory release. And as the name suggests, offenders are released statutorily or automatically, usually after serving two-thirds of their sentence. This release mechanism really reflects that large body of evidence that shows that we don't want them to stay their entire time in prison, that we are best protected when there is a period of supervision in the community. So when you see a headline about the parole board approving statutory release, wrong. We have not approved it. It's the law. We have actually nothing to do with that release. Well, actually, maybe we do. Any type of release, the board can set special conditions that the offender must abide by. Those special conditions aim to help manage the risk an offender may pose when they're in the community. These conditions should be specific to the offender's risk and could include abstaining from alcohol if alcohol was part of their offense cycle, or illicit drugs. Or we may have a condition that you continue to reach out for psychological counseling, or that you attend school, or that you hold a job. There's all sorts of special conditions that the board could add to a release of an offender to help manage their risk. It's important to know that the board does not shorten the sentence an offender receives from the court. Every offender serves his or her entire sentence. Parole only affects how it will be served, or what portion of the sentence will be served in the community versus prison. If an offender does receive parole in the federal system, or even if they're statutorily released, he or she remains under the sentence of imprisonment or under the supervision of a parole officer until the warrant expiry date, until they have completed their full sentence. And during that time, if they are in the community, an offender can be returned to prison if they don't follow the conditions that have been set, or if the parole officer deems that the offender's risk is no longer manageable in the community. As Dan mentioned, I was a parole officer back in the day, and I can tell you that being on parole, federal parole, is no piece of cake. Reporting to a parole officer, sometimes every day, if I think you should see me every day, you're going to see me every day. Sometimes they're having to follow treatment plans, they have to abide by special conditions, they have to remain in a set geographic area. They have to try to reestablish themselves and their credibility with family, with their children, with friends. They have to try and find employment and appropriate housing. And with a criminal record, that's not always easy. And basically, they have to get approval from their parole officer for just about anything they want to do. And parole officers, at least at the federal system, have typically, I think, a caseload of approximately 30 offenders. So it's a pretty tight system. Parole officers really know who they are working with, and can spend quite a bit of time with 30 individuals in the course of a week. So back to that headline about the parole board freeing people, it's hardly the truth. They continue to serve their sentence in the community, under supervision, under strict instructions, and they can be returned to the penitentiary at any time. So who makes these decisions in the parole board? They're made by board members, and board members are drawn from the community. They receive extensive and ongoing risk management training. And it's the board, through the appointment of each board member, that gives Canadians a direct voice in how they want offenders to serve their sentences and how they want their safety to be enhanced. Currently, we have about 73 board members. It's a combination of full-time and part-time members. They come from all walks of life, former social workers, former corrections professionals, lawyers, police officers, some chiefs of police, journalists, educators. We have some from the military, and so forth. And when we're looking for board members, the process is open to all Canadians. The board's also supposed to reflect the diversity of Canadian society, and the board is becoming more reflective of that. 53% of the board members are now women, 10% are Indigenous, and 7% are visible minorities. And how do we make our decisions? Well, if you don't like dealing with risk, don't become a board member. We have to assess risk, and board members have to be assured of two things before granting any kind of release, and it's in the law. One, the offender will not, if she or he does reoffend, present an undue risk to society, and two, that the release of the offender will contribute to the protection of society by facilitating the reintegration of the offender into society as a law-abiding citizen. To assess that risk, the board looks at a number of things. There's actuarial tools. which have been proven time and again to be good predictors of future behavior for recidivism or reoffending. There's a number of tools. They've been largely developed by Canadians, and Canada is, our researchers are leading the world in this area. So we have some actuarial tools that tell us, you know, given all of these things put into your age, your escape, your criminal history, et cetera, whether you will, in all probability, reoffend or not. We will look at the offender's criminal and parole history, because that certainly tells us a lot. We look at how they've behaved while they've been incarcerated. They had a lot of disciplinary charges. Have they been participating in programs, et cetera, et cetera. We look at whether the offender, and usually this is at the hearing itself, has an understanding of his or her crime and can understand the risk that he or she may pose and how they plan to address that risk if they are released. We look at whether that release plan that has been developed for them is realistic and viable. And we certainly look to whether there is community support or not. Board members will look at information from the police, from the courts. They'll look at the judge's comments at sentencing. We'll look to professionals for their insight. We will look at, if there's there, psychological assessments, psychiatric assessments. We look to the correctional authorities to tell us, what do you think about this person? How have they behaved? How have they done in their programming? Because there is a case management team that works with offenders during his or her incarceration. And board members will also take into consideration the views expressed by victims, whether that information is received at the time of sentencing or from victims who have actually registered with either Correctional Service of Canada or with the board, because they can provide written statements or they can actually deliver a prepared statement at the parole hearing itself. All of this information is carefully weighed before rendering a final decision about whether that offender's risk can be safely managed in the community. Board members are busy. We complete, on average, about 15,000 conditional release reviews every year. And what are our results? First of all, let me just say that most offenders don't apply for day parole. On any given day, there are about 23,000 federal offenders in the system, 14,000 in prison, 9,000 or so, give or take a few, in the community. 1,500 of those in the community are on day parole. That's less than 10% of the entire prison population. For those who do apply, and it's self-selecting, only the best, only the cream of the crop really apply for day parole. The board grants day parole 79% of the time. Now, every offender gets reviewed for full parole. The board grants full parole release in only 40% of cases. So 6 of 10 offenders are denied a release of full parole. Another fact to add is that most people who are released on either day parole or full parole are well past their eligibility dates. For example, while offenders are eligible for full parole at one-third, after serving one-third of their sentence, so about 33% of their sentence must be served inside, on average, they serve almost 46%, close to half of their sentence in a penitentiary before their release into the community. So we overestimate this leniency in terms of how many do get released and when they get released. Now, our success rates, for those released on day parole, over 99% of offenders successfully complete their sentence without reoffending. For those released on day parole, so these are Parole Board of Canada releasing these people, 98% successfully complete their sentence without reoffending. I'm pretty happy with those results, and I think it shows that our approach is effective and contributes to our collective safety. Unfortunately, that kind of good news doesn't tend to make the headlines very often. In the correctional and conditional release system in our profession, it's easy to be risk averse, and we need to pause every now and again to ensure that we are managing risk and not avoiding it. We can look to some very recent history of conditional release in Canada. In the early 2000s, during a get tough on crime period, the parole board grant rates for both day and full parole releases plummeted over a 9-year period. Now, for the past few years, these rates have increased, and our day parole grant rate is now at the highest rate it's been in 18 years. Along with this is an increase of those who successfully complete a release granted by the board. Combined, over 98% successfully complete their sentences. Now, I want to share a few of my prior... I'm going to let you think about that for a minute. There might be some questions. I'm hoping you have some questions after. I want to share just a few priorities that I have in terms of improving the work of the board. Obviously, one of the obvious ones would be that we need to continually work to better understand risk and how it applies to the work in the community and how we explain it. Another area that needs addressing is the over-representation, or I should say the disproportionate representation, of Indigenous peoples, particularly Indigenous women, who now make up over 40% of the women offender population that's incarcerated. The board has introduced over the years different approaches to parole hearings for Indigenous people. We have elder-assisted hearings, where an Indigenous elder will help assist the parole board members with the parole hearing. This would usually include culturally appropriate traditions, perhaps such as smudging, sitting in a circle, and hearing from each person in that circle. For women specifically, knowing that their pathways into crime are very different from men, and knowing that over 90% of women have experienced either a combination of sexual or physical abuse, I want to look at what kind of a parole hearing could include a more trauma-informed approach, because currently our parole hearings for men and women are exactly the same. But where I really want to make some inroads is with regard to partnerships and community outreach and to increase Canadians' understanding of what we do. If the board is to be open and accountable to Canadians, we have to work a lot harder to ensure that the public is aware of what we do, why we do it, and who we do it for, and what results we achieve for their hard-earned tax dollars. I'm not sure if you're aware, but any Canadian can apply to observe a parole hearing. Now, for this area, you probably have to travel to Kingston to hear one, but I would strongly encourage you to do this. I don't think many Canadians are aware that that is an option, but it is. You can apply, and I would more than phone the Kingston office if you happen to be up in that area, and we do our best to arrange for you to observe a hearing. We also have a decision registry because we have to write all our decisions, and that decision registry, any member of the public can request a copy of a decision for any particular case that they might be interested in. Our work with victims is increasing. Last year, we had over 33,000 contacts with victims, and in that same period, 328 victims attended and presented statements at various parole hearings across the country. But I think this major challenge I want to get back to isn't to engage communities like what we're doing right now. And I'm referring to a process where the capacity for communities to be involved is developed and nurtured so that communities can actively be engaged. I think it's the essential ingredient and the cornerstone to the safe and effective reintegration of people back into our communities. In fact, back in 1984, in a government document on sentencing, and I'll quote, it said, "It's not so much the laws or even the agencies of the criminal justice system that have the major impact on creating a just, peaceful, and safe society. Rather, it is the attitudes and behaviors of individual citizens. The understanding and support of the public is essential to a reform process." That quote is as relevant today as it was 34 years ago, and in fact, maybe more relevant and maybe more important, particularly in our use of social media. And as I mentioned earlier, the tweets and the sound bites and the polarizing ideologies. It behooves us, the board and other criminal justice agencies, to ensure we work with communities to explain what we do and to look to communities for ways in which we might do it better. To conclude, I don't have all the answers on how we can actually achieve this, but today I see as a start. I personally, and we as the Parole Board of Canada, are becoming more proactive in reaching out to communities, to national and international organizations, in an effort to look at how we can work together, how we can improve what we do. So my hope is that when you leave today, you leave with a better understanding of the work of the Parole Board of Canada, and you take that knowledge and create your own headlines and narratives about punishment and conditional release. It is through events like this, with engaged citizens like yourselves, where the learning and dialogue goes both ways, so we can all help to contribute to a better informed and safer Canada. So thank you for listening. And I welcome any questions you may have.